This meeting is for 1 hour and 15 minutes. Tarek K will be sharing on steps 10 and 11, entering the world of the spirit for 60 minutes. Tarek, thank you for your service and your willingness to share your life here with us. We love and appreciate you. At this time, please help me give a warm welcome to Tarek from Birmingham, Alabama, where his home group is the Over the Bridge group. Welcome, Tarek, and over to you.
Thank you, James. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Tarek. That prayer, it's a beautiful prayer, acknowledging the presence of God. And the set-aside prayer has been a very important prayer for me over the years, probably my most used prayer several times, many times throughout the course of a day. It's difficult to try to share everything I want to share, which is an impossibility in an hour about these two steps. My late grand sponsor used to say these two steps are like an abyss. They're limitless with what we can do with them. A power greater than myself separated me from alcohol and mind-altering substances on the morning of November 5th in 2007. And I recently celebrated what I could refer to as a rebirth date. Something died and something was reborn. The third step promise talks about rebirth. When we sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things will happen. The sincerity is such a vital ingredient in this recipe. Something happened to me when I was incarcerated. There was a commitment that took place. Almost like, I think it's Fred's story more about alcoholism. He talks about the moment I fully accepted these proposals, the effect was electric. The feeling that my problem had been solved. Because I'd bounced in and out of the rooms for years prior to that separation, the miracle of separation that last time. And I didn't have sincerity. I didn't have commitment. And those were born. Those were gifts. And it is my belief and my interpretation that as long as I can view the sincerity, the commitment, the willingness, if I can view these ingredients as gifts, the way I live my life will show my appreciation for the source of the gift, which I believe is the God of my understanding. It's interesting, every year there is a part of my mind about 2 weeks prior to November 5th, I will begin to reflect. I will try to travel back through time and remember what was happening in my life during that period of time. And the dark years for me, the last, 4 or 5 years leading up to 2007, there was this inherent desire to be free of my mind. And it was a combination of wanting to experience the present moment. But as I'm describing it, I don't want you to believe or think that I knew that's what I was looking for back then. I was looking for freedom from the bondage of self. I was looking for the present moment because the way we live our lives begins to, this mountain of consequences sometimes, not for everybody, because I don't want anyone here to believe that consequences have something to do with being alcoholic or struggling with these mind-altering substances. The drama around it doesn't have anything to do with it. But it's part of the experience for many of us. And there is so much guilt and so much failure and so many torched relationships and stealing from the people I love and lying to the people I love. It is a difficult and hard way of life. But I'm also here to report that the spiritual basis of life, you got to be tough for that as well. It's not for the faint of heart. And I reflect back over that period of time and I see my desire to be free of myself. And I got into music and going to concerts and we would travel around the country here in the States. Anybody on this call that's familiar with the Grateful Dead, and there are these other bands that are similar to the Grateful Dead. So you have these underground cultures that travel around the country, going to these concerts. And there's a lot of mind-altering substances. There's a lot of drinking at these events. And every night we would travel into a town. We'd get our hotels. We'd go to the parking lot before the show. And it was a big, almost like festival, people selling every substance you can think of, alcohol everywhere. And every night the goal was to be free of my mind. Because when the music started for 3 hours, I had no past. I had no future. I was completely present to my life. And it reminds me of Carl Jung's letter to Bill. And I have this wonderful book. It's called The War of the Gods in Addiction. And it's about Carl Jung, Alcoholics Anonymous, and evil. And this gentleman wrote an entire book about the letters that Bill Wilson and Carl Jung wrote back and forth to each other. It's interesting because if you read Bill's letters, much longer than Carl Jung. Carl Jung was at the very end of his life. And he said something in his letter that many of us who have been around Alcoholics Anonymous have probably heard someone refer to this passage. He's talking about Roland H. because Bill's finally given Carl Jung an update about Roland. And he says, Roland's craving for alcohol was the equivalent on a low level of a spiritual thirst of our being for wholeness. I call that connection, because alcoholism and addiction, these ailments are rooted in separation. And there's something in us that desire for that present moment has to do with connection. And expressed in medieval language, Carl Jung referred to it as the union with God. He says the only right and legitimate way to such an experience is that it happens to you in reality, and it can only happen to you when you walk on a path which leads you to higher understanding. You might be led to that goal by an act of grace or through a personal and honest contact with friends who have already had the experience, or through a higher education of the mind beyond the confines of mere rationalism. I see from your letter that Roland H. has chosen the second way, personal and honest contact with friends who've had the experience. Under his circumstances, that was the best one. And so as I'm describing that desire that I only uncover through reflection, and like I said, this time of year always puts me in that, you know, it propels me into that state of reflection. And I see that desire that I had then, and translating it now, steps 10 and 11 can be the same. They can be a vehicle to the same experience. In the big book, step 10 has a short version and a long version. And then there's another version in the 12 and 12. After 15 years of experience, Bill writes an essay on it. I'm not here to say one way is right, one way is wrong. It's open to interpretation. What's important is we practice a 10th and 11th step. There are different interpretations of what the steps are about. What you're going to get in this next hour is my interpretation, which has changed over my 15 years. And it's not that anyone else's interpretation is wrong. This has just been my experience with it and how I can connect it to this idea of experiencing God. In an imminent way, because for most of us growing up, God was very transcendent. It wasn't here. It was somewhere else, somewhere other than where I was. I'm here to report to you that God was, I'm no closer to God than I was with my bar, with my butt strapped to a bar stool, drinking in a bar 16 years ago. The only thing that's been affected is my awareness or my consciousness of the presence. That's the only thing that's changed. God was keeping me safe and protected then. And it's only by the grace of God that I'm here this today to share this experience with you. And that's not lost on me. When I started going to meetings in 2004, I experienced that miracle of separation in 2007. I was incarcerated for a period of time. And then I landed in a residential treatment center. And the men, and this was such a gift, I landed in a boiling kettle of big book enthusiasts. I call them big book enthusiasts. I don't like the other terminology that we throw around these rooms to refer to people that are passionate about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do not know how people have it in their hearts to refer to someone that loves the big book and compare them to something that happened in World War II. I've heard that terminology. I have been to places where the big book is unpopular for some reason. That hasn't been my experience. Now, the big book is an emotional recipe cookbook. At the end of the day, it gives you a set of instructions and it tells you what the ingredients are, and it's conditional. Constantly, the authors of the big book are saying, Tarek, this will happen if you do this. It's conditional. There are a series of actions that we must take. And so I landed in that kettle of big book enthusiasts, and heavily influenced by these gentlemen who brought the big book. They had the big book. They brought the big book back to life. They were Joe and Charlie. And they took me through this process, and they held my hand, and they spoon fed me the program of recovery as outlined in the big book. And one important thing they taught me was that the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is the way of life described in the big book. That's been lost on us. The dust cover of the big book no longer makes the statement. I think they removed it after the third edition, where the dust cover used to say the first 164 pages, which is the AA message. And now we're left to leave it open to discussion. It's a way of life described in the big book. Of course, the beginning of the big book talks about alcoholism. But then on page 62, they tell you selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of all your troubles. You know, they can't put that on page one. None of us would have stuck around. They had to wait to page 62 to put that in the big book, because they had to build what's called identification. We had to be convinced, whoa, these people are very, they understand where I am. And they're not there anymore. They've been taken to the gates of insanity and almost death, clearly in these descriptions. And they've been brought back to tell a story. Same thing. That's why I'm here today. I believe that I owe a debt to God, and I'm the only one that can pay that debt. And the way I live my life, in the attempt that I make to sacrifice my personal time to share, to give freely what was given to me. And again, these old timers, they taught me, Tarek, you'll never get it unless you give it away. I heard in the early years, you only keep it by giving it away. But then I heard a group of people say, Tarek, you'll never get it unless you give it away. And so that sank deeply into my psyche, and it has been with me all these years. So these men who are still in my life to this day, they're not my sponsors. You know, I have a sponsor, they were in a different school. Let's say that. Their school of step 10 was very much how the short form of the step is depicted. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So over the past year, I've played this game with myself. When I go to meetings and there's topics, I'm always curious where the discussion in the meeting goes after the person gives the little 5 to 7 minute pitch on the topic, and then they open it up. And with step 10, without fail, over the past year, I mean, I don't know how many, but not many. It's not a step that's talked about a lot, at least where I am. But it's always about an inventory I do at the end of the day, typically, or it is what's discussed is admitting when I'm wrong. And it's such a thin layer of what the 10th step is truly about in my interpretation. These are important aspects. And again, this is just an interpretation of living this way of life, you know, through experience. And so there was no active 10th step with me in those early years. It was, I got really good at admitting when I was wrong, but typically that was after a harm was already created. So I was having to go back and make a 10th step apology. And the inventories were not happening. There was no self-examination. And so something that I was introduced to, because what ended up happening around a year and a half sober, I began to experience my bottom with the second half of step one, which is the unmanageability, because the alcohol and the substances were gone, but the behavior had not changed all that much. And I stopped making the amends. Like I was shot out of a cannon. So making amends in the first like 6 to 9 months after I started, got to step 8 and 9, which is around the 4 month part, it became less and less important because I couldn't see the connection with making amends and drinking again. I just couldn't see the connection because my life had gotten a little bit better. And so, there is a clubhouse where I got sober in Atlanta, Georgia, and there's a clubhouse there. And there was this guy who stands out in front of the clubhouse after the meeting. He stands with, this was back when we had CDs. We don't have CDs anymore. So this was, I believe this was in 2008. I'm leaving a Thursday night young people's meeting. And this gentleman is, he always would leave the meeting like 3 or 4 minutes before the meeting, the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting, and he would stand outside. And as you walked out of the clubhouse, he would give you a CD or two CDs. And so he handed me these two CDs this one night. And I think this is before I picked up my first my first anniversary token. And I did what most people probably would do. They took the CDs. They said, thank you. I went to my car. I put it in the door, not to look at it anytime soon. All right. So let's fast forward. I'm at this year and a half point. I'm acting out, you know, sexually in the rooms in ways that we talk about you shouldn't. I'm chasing skirt all the time at the meetings. The meetings have become more of a social setting for me. I'm sponsoring a bunch of guys. That was always drilled into me. Nothing so much ensures immunity against the first drink like intensive work with other alcoholics. That was beat into me. I knew it. I did it. But there was something missing because at this point, I knew I had a lot of money to pay back. So after my lease ran out, I had moved back into my parents' basement so I could start making financial amends because I owed a lot of people money. And so I followed the advice of others and I did that. But I didn't enjoy living in that basement by myself. I was still manipulating my parents. I couldn't stand to be by myself. I didn't enjoy solitude. If I was at home, I was on the phone with one of you trying to figure out what fellowship, what are we doing tonight? I can't be by myself. The computer, you know, music's playing, the TV is on. I didn't like the stillness was not something that I enjoyed. And this one night I'm leaving a meeting and I'm just like, there's something off. I can't put my finger on it, but I have this intuitive thought. I don't know why, but I went to my car door and I pulled out that CD that had been sitting there for almost a year in my door in my car. And I put this CD in, and it's my future grand sponsor. You know, may he rest in peace, Mark Houston. And he is sitting, he starts this talk with, I love meetings that start with meditation. They bring you here to now, to the only reality of your life, which is this moment. I've never been here before. I've never experienced all of you before. This is new. This is fresh. How can you not wake up every day and just want to go out, go and engage life when that is the state of mind that you have. And Mark said, that's what steps 10 and 11 did for me. And I'm in my car saying to myself, what big book is this guy reading from? Because I considered myself at that time a big book. And, you know, I was a big book guy. But we had so skimmed over step 10 that first time through. And it was just like some spot check inventory. It was a way of doing steps 4 through 9 throughout the course of the day. And I listened to this CD and he's talking about these words in the big book, you know, that we have launched into the world of the spirit. What is that? What is the world of the spirit? You know, that's open to interpretation. Is it our relationships with others? Is it living a life of service? Is it always trying to help thy neighbor? Is it constantly trying to think about God, to remember God as often as possible, to be mindful and be aware of myself and my interactions with others? Sacrifice, service, what is it? It's all of those things. And more, and much, much more. And he was talking about growing and understanding and effectiveness. And I asked I got a new sponsor who had been sponsored by Mark for years. And Scott told me that it's, you know, understanding the spiritual realm and being effective in the human realm. This is what these steps 10 and 11 have to offer. And so what ended up happening is I engaged the 10th step in a different way. I began to work with just the word watch. Watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So I began to be the guardian of my inner space. I wanted to observe what happens to me in the presence of certain people, in the presence of certain situations, in the presence of certain activities in life, work, home group, fellowship after the meeting, out on a date with a girl. What is it? Like, how am I experiencing myself? I began to watch. And today I use the word witness. And then the practice after a few days is a watch and ask. Now I'm going to turn. I'm going to turn, watch, ask God, turn my thoughts back to the present moment. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And I cease fighting the present moment. I try not to resist. I don't do this perfectly. This is the hardest step, step 10, the hardest step to practice by far, because we turn and we try to practice a code of love and tolerance and we stop fighting and we discuss with someone immediately. If we've harmed someone, we make amends quickly. Those are I was taught were the last things that hopefully, if I'm doing an active 10 step, I'm going to get to experience the grace of a statement that's embedded in the 11th step that we pause when agitated or doubtful and we ask God for the right thought or action. That possibility happens only with an active 10th step. And so now I've thrown out some mechanics, right? And I don't want to be a mechanics guy. I don't want to be an information guy. What my current sponsor, Ralph, says is we are about transformation, not information. So let me give you a real life example of how this 10th step played out this past week. Because this past week, I had one of the most difficult weeks I've had in quite some time. And so the 10th step was very active. A Tuesday, I travel for my job, and Tuesday I found myself in the left lane of an interstate with a wall to my left and an 18-wheeler to my right and debris in the road. I had no option but to hit the debris. And it's, you know, the holidays are coming up. My family is in the process of moving. So there's a lot of expenses going out the door right now. And I pull my car over and there's nothing wrong with the tire, but the car's not driving right. But I've still got 175 miles to go, and I need to get there because I need to make money. There's some financial fear going on. So I had to take a deep breath standing on the side of the road, and I had to say, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. And I took a deep breath and I became aware of the presence in that moment. And I had to do this practice several times as I'm driving because I got back in my car. My car was drivable, but the alignment in the car was destroyed, and I was having to pull very much to the right to keep my car straight. About 100 miles later, my tire explodes. And so now I'm sitting on the side of the road and the fear's coming down. And I see the fear, I see the anger, and my anger is directed to God at this point, because I believe the second step, which says God is everything. And these experiences are part of God's universe. And I'm just understanding why, you know, trying to understand why this is happening now. But what happens is I say another prayer. God, please remove my fear, remove this thinking, and direct my attention to what you would have me be. So I called AAA. It's a roadside service that I have. So I had to sit on the side of the road for 4 hours. 4 hours. I called my partner. I was talking to her about it. And she's like, I would die if I had to sit on the road for 4 hours. Oh, my God. But there was a part of me that enjoyed sitting on the road being still. But it was in battle. It was a constant fluctuation of thinking about the money I was going to have to spend on the car, being aware that I needed to practice a 10th step because I'm noticing these things in myself, and turn my thoughts back to the moment. And so then I started to play this game, which was when someone showed up in my consciousness, I called them. And so I started having all these calls over the next 4 hours. And then I have a friend of mine, Katie, she always says everything's orchestrated by God. The people in line in front of us at the grocery store, the people in line anywhere we go, orchestrated by God. You know, who I'm going to end up with sitting next to at a meeting, sitting next to at a concert, orchestrated by God. And so I'm waiting for this wrecker service to come take me. And this guy who is a very, you know, country boy from deep south, the deep south in the United States. And I'm like, great, you know, what have I got in common with this guy? We're human beings. That's what I have in common with him. And that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the jewels of this program, is rediscovering my humanity and how everyone is a mirror to me. Trying to practice that, you know, the defects aren't so glaring. Other people's defects aren't so glaring when you can see them and see yourself. I have the capacity to do exactly what this person is doing that's pissing me off right now. And so I saw the humanity in this young man, and he had to tow me 75 miles. And we had one of the most beautiful conversations about life, about his children, about his failed relationships, about why he enjoys driving a wrecker service. And it wasn't Tarek talking about Tarek. It was me just listening to this guy and asking some questions. And you know what hit me in that drive as a result of steps 10 and 11? Love thy neighbor has nothing to do with the people that live next door to us. And that experience of love thy neighbor brought itself to life in that experience. And so this guy drops me off. And of course, I'm checking my car, and we had it towed to a car service. Now this guy's out back unloading my car, and I'm sitting there and I'm observing myself and I'm watching, and I have this intuitive thought, because part of the 10th step is the vital sixth sense. That God conscious and that intuitive thought of the still small voice. All right. So I go out back and I notice he's unloaded my car and he's gone. And so I had his phone number because he had called me to tell me he was on his way. So I called him and I said, hey, I want to give you some money, man. You did me such a huge favor. He's like, no, man, you did me a favor. You're a good human being, man. You take care of yourself. You know, he didn't come back to get his tip or anything. And it was just from listening to that human being, you know, and we talked about just life stuff. Because of the 10th step, because of watch, ask, turn, being present, you know, as the week would unfold, I find out this car is going to cost me $1,000, and the fear sets in. And then I have some difficult circumstances going on at some job sites at work. And I'm watching some events unfold that I wish would not unfold the way they are. Thy will be done, God, as it always is. That's a 10-step practice. I'm watching. I see the discomfort. I see the fear. I take a deep breath. I become conscious of the presence of whatever that thing is that I know is with me all the time. Thy will be done as it always is, God. Let's move back to the present moment. Line of the oil, back to the middle. You know, so I get my car out of the shop. I pay the $1,000, and I'm like 12 hours later, all these engine lights are going off in my car. And my traction system just goes, you know, and I, at one point I said, WTF God. I was like, what the you know, I was so angry. I was like, God, just let up on me a little bit here. And so I'm getting up and, you know, I'm washing my face, I'm putting lotion on, and my finger scratches my nose, right? So I get all self-conscious a little bit. I'm like, man, I got this meeting tomorrow on Zoom. These people are going to see my nose. It looks like I got into a cat fight. Oh no, they're going to think that maybe I got in some argument with my girlfriend and we got into some altercation. That's why I have a scratch on my face. This is after an hour in prayer and meditation. This is the mind that I am working with. Line of the will, thy will be done. Take a deep breath. Watch. God, please help me. Turn my thoughts back to the present moment. I was coming unglued. This is after an hour and sitting in prayer and meditation, folks. I couldn't imagine if I veered off the path for too long, what would happen to this person. Over the last year, I've put on like 25 or 30 pounds, and I go get a physical about a month ago. And the doctor says my glucose is very low and that if it drops any lower, I'm going to be in danger of being pre-diabetic. He's like, you got to lose 50 pounds. And so I was an athlete. You know, I played sports my first year in college. I've been a gym rat in my life, but that's not been my recent past. I don't have any current experience with that kind of stuff, although I got an opinion on it. Like I have some real recent experience and I don't. And so I finally had a surrender, which I went to a friend of mine who's a trainer, and I saw what she did with one of the men that I sponsor. And I've seen this transformation before my very eyes. He's a big guy. He's 6'4", 6'5", and he has dropped a lot of weight and he looks really good. I said, you know what? I'm going to get her to train me. And so yesterday was my first training session. And we're sitting there and we do the workout. My heart rate's 150 to 160 throughout the entire workout. And I didn't eat any carbs before. And I had no fuel in my body. And I've been getting these lightheaded spells over the past year, which I think is an indication of the hypoglycemia. And I begin to get the tunnel vision and I'm sweating profusely and my knees are about to buckle. And my poor friend's like, this is our first workout. At the very end of the workout, she's like, do I need to call an ambulance? And I'm sitting there, I'm praying, you know, as I'm keeled over, you know, just keep me safe and protected. Keep me safe and protected. Keep me safe and protected. And she went and got me some Tootsie Rolls and I came out of it, but I have these $350 back to the money thing. Earbuds in my pocket that fall out. And so I finally get back, I get home, I take a shower, and then later on in the day, I realize my $350 earbuds are gone and the fear sets in. And this is it again. Now, relationships are not always smooth. We love the people that we're in relationship with. We communicate with the people that we're in relationship with. We sacrifice for the people we're in a relationship with. We become selfish sometimes with the people we're in a relationship with. And we get angry with the people we're in a relationship with. We're having a relationship with God. So anger has to be a part of the equation. So for me, I burst. I was angry. I said, I've had enough. You know what? Just back the F up. You know, this is me talking to my higher power. This is a conversation that I have. And so all of these events transpired this week. And as I'm moving through them, there is a sense of doing it with some ease and some, and it's not as effortful as it is for a lot of people. Yeah, in the moment, I experienced the angst, the anger, the fear. Line of the will, watch, ask, turn, stop fighting, watch, ask, turn, stop fighting. Love and tolerance is our code. And there were other things that transpired this week, but I don't want to take up a lot of time talking about them, but they were forcing me to practice the 10th step. And so then I'm reading this book. This is another wonderful book. I recently stumbled across a dear friend of mine who's on this call somewhere. He recommended it to me. It's called Loving the Present. And it says in this book focuses on awareness, which is a thread that runs through all the spiritual traditions. The reason for this is that to apply spiritual principles, we all talk about spiritual principles. It's embedded in our way of life that's outlined in the big book. To apply spiritual principles, we must be present. The concept of awareness as presence is a connection that some people have written about since the ancient times. This focus on awareness in a way that is actually more applicable to recovery, because it takes awareness far beyond breathing and into the realm of spiritual practice of deepening connection and awareness in every way possible in life as a goal of life. The point of presence and being aware and awake, which I believe is what the 10th step is truly about, from a spiritual perspective, is to develop a connection to and an understanding with our limited understanding of the higher power in order to live life more fully in love and truth. If you're trying to find a location with a map and the map lacks sufficient detail, you might find your goal, but you will be challenged to do so. If living in truth and love in harmony with the higher power is your goal, at least we should be starting with the intention to draw a map with the actual end location that we desire being clearly marked. And the reason I'm sharing the 10th step in this way is I'm trying to give you a new location for what the 10th step's truly about. And it's in our big book. If you have a fourth edition, it's on page 567 in the Spiritual Experience Appendix. It's a short little paragraph, actually, that's on the second page of the Spiritual Experience Appendix. And it says, most of us believe that the essence, the central point of the spiritual experience is the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. The awareness of a power greater than ourselves. That translates in my interpretation that I have to remember God as often as possible. The 10th step is how I remember God. Now, I believe God uses those circumstances that I just described to you to pull me closer, to create a need for God. And maybe it's only by the grace of God that I have this desire to use that tool, that practice, that 10th step to be closer to God. Well, the Spiritual Experience Appendix, not technically part of the program of recovery because it's not in the first 164 pages. But since I like the big book, I'm going to go to page 51. 51 says that it talks about here are thousands of men and women worldly indeed. It's the paragraph on the bottom of page 50 that starts. But then on the top of 51, they say, these people show how the change came over them when many hundreds, and now we've got millions of people, are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God, the imminent nature of God, is today the most important fact of their lives. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. And that's what the 10th step has brought to me, is an ability to stay awake, to stay present, using the struggles of day-to-day life to communicate with my higher power. Does it mean I do this practice perfectly? No. I'm a lot better at it now than I was 5 years ago. And 5 years from now, I'm going to be much better at it than I am today. I wake up, I fall asleep. I wake up, I fall asleep. The ego wants to fixate on certain aspects of my personality and my psyche. That's fine. Spiritual warfare, line of the will, get out of the road. You know, we don't want to know why we got into the middle of the road. We want to get out of the middle of the road when the Mack truck's bearing down on us. That's what the 10th step is about. It gets me out of the middle of the road. Entering the world of the spirit is such an amazing promise that we have, but those first 9 steps are the launching pad of the world of the spirit. And when you look back over these steps, the way there's a trinity that is found in the steps. There's many trinities in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the ones I really enjoy is this one. Step one is a form of self-examination, right? I let the evidence of my experience with alcohol dictate whether or not I believe that I am a real alcoholic. That's what is self-examination. And then I examine the unmanageability of my life, clean, sober, or not. Self-examination. Step two is about God, the God idea. It must be investigated. I have to ask questions because I'm faced with a proposition that I either have to go on to the bitter end or I need to accept spiritual help. And that comes in the form of God. That's what the big book's truly about. It's a way of life where our relationship with our higher power is of the utmost importance, because it's reflected in every relationship. There is a scary proposition. What if all the relationships in my life are a direct reflection of my relationship with God? And so am I going to want to be very vigilant in how I engage people? It doesn't mean I'm not going to make mistakes and I'm not going to harm people, but there's this overwhelming sense of wanting to engage life at that level, to really love thy neighbor. And this is what the 10th step does. It brings you present. It wakes you up. It has nothing to do with writing inventory or just admitting when I am wrong. That's just part of practicing these principles in all our affairs, although that's the way the short form of the step is written, and it is part of the step. And so as I wake up to this second step being turning to God, the third step, a lot of us, me included, thought it was about God as well, but there's a part of the third step that is a little different. It says, God, please take away my difficulties so that victory over them shall bear witness to those that I will help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And I'm to witness, like me being on this call today is I'm being compelled by my third step to testify about the power behind these two steps and how they influence my relationship with God, which thus influences my relationship with all of you. Again, we make mistakes. We have tools to clean up the mistakes and the harms that are sometimes created, but they're so infrequent compared to the way I lived my life 17 and 18 and 16 years ago. You know, it took me a long time to approach every individual that I had harmed and every institution I owed money to. It took me 8.5 years to approach every single. I have nobody on this earth that I'm aware that I owe an amends to. I just went through the steps with a group of men. I had some amends. I've got my last one scheduled over Thanksgiving here in this, you know, this that time of year here in the States. And that's a whole nother topic, the reworking of steps. But so step three, I turn to you. I bear witness. Steps 4, 5, and 6 are about self-examination again. Step 7, I turn to God. Steps 8 and 9, I turn back to you. Step 10 is the self-examination that I've been talking about for the majority of this talk. Step 11 is where I turn to God. And step 11, you know, I didn't grow up in a home that made me that blocked me from the God idea when I got here. I had parents. I had an alcoholic father who was absent. I had a career-oriented mother who never wanted to be home because she had an alcoholic husband at home. And I had a grandmother who raised me, who taught me more about God's plan is written. She was always of that mindset. Regardless of how bad the circumstances were, she would say, God, this is what God has written. This is what God has written over and over with her prayer beads. And so I saw a woman who had complete faith, and regardless of what was going on, this was it. But I was very agnostic. I believe that I knew there was something out there, but I didn't care about it. It didn't care about me. I didn't care about it. I just wanted to go on with my life. When I was delivered to Alcoholics Anonymous and some of these other 12-step fellowships, it wasn't hard for me to pray. I remember being in the treatment center in the basement, and I was instructed to get on my knees and pray. And I was willing to do whatever it took. Whatever my sponsor directed me to do at the time, I did. And I got on my knees. There was four guys in one room, two bunk beds. And I remember I was on the bottom bunk bed, and I'm on my knees. I'm waiting till everyone falls asleep. And I am on my knees praying, and I'm looking over my shoulder to see if the guys in the other bunk beds were looking at me. And I did it. I did it anyway. And prayer was an act of submission at that point. But it's what's evolved here over these last 15 years is baffling to me. So when I first, in those first early years, I had a, a bookmark that was from a meeting up in New Jersey, and it had the St. Francis prayer on one side, and then it had the evening review questions from page 86. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And it had those series of questions that I would look at every night. And then I would say a prayer, and then I typically would say the St. Francis prayer, and then that was it. And because I was practicing no real 10th step throughout the course of the day, my only prayer was taking place in the morning and in the evening. And then somewhere along the way, the mentors I've had in this deal, they said, Tarek, how would your relationship with your significant other look if you gave it some time in the morning and gave it some time in the evening, and that was it? And I'm talking maybe 3 to 4 minutes at best. In the morning, that's not going to be a very positive relationship. It's probably not going to end very well. It's probably going to evaporate at some point. And so I stumbled across Mark and the CD, and I got a new sponsor, and I called him to ask him about meditation. I had about a year and 9 months at this point. And he said, thank God for my sponsor. He didn't give me a bunch of opinions on what he thought meditation was. And he had a daily meditation practice. He said, Tarek, if you want to know about meditation, you should go talk to the Buddhists. They've been doing it for 2,500 years, and they probably have more experience than anybody else. Go find yourself a Buddhist monastery. Go have your own experience, and then let's talk about it. So I moved back to my parents' house in that basement at that point, and I'm walking my dog. And my parents lived on this two-lane road, and For years, I knew when I pulled out of my parents and I went a quarter of a mile, there was this big wall, and the gate had Chinese writing on it. And there was a building way off the road. Never once thought anything about it other than it being an Asian church. That's all I knew in my mind. And so I have this conversation with my sponsor, and I can't remember if it was the same night or like one or two nights later. I'm walking my dog down the street from my parents' house, and I'm walking by this big brick wall, and there's a banner hanging from the wall, and it says free meditation classes. I was blown away. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. And so that following weekend on Saturday, I went up there, and it turns out it's a Buddhist monastery. It turns out it's a Zen Buddhist monastery. It's all no monks. It's all Chinese nuns, Zen nuns. And they give free meditation classes. We work off donations. And so they had a set of classes starting. And so I went and took the 12-week course on meditation. I did these weekend meditation retreats. And I took the classes, beginners and intermediate, 2 years in a row. And that's where I gained my experience on meditation. And I remember Mark used to say, If you do not meditate, you do not know God. The voice of God is silence. This is what Mark used to say. And now I understand that from personal experience. But prayer, the back to the third step, when we sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things will happen. Unfortunately, sometimes sincerity in our prayer life is tied to extremely difficult events going on in our life. And in 2016, my father, who was absent from my life, and it's so amazing to me how all these steps feed into each other, but I hope I've got enough time. So my father was a very abusive drunk, emotionally, physically, verbally, and he terrorized the household. So when I was 16 years old, I decided I didn't want my father in my life anymore. And I actually had physical altercations with him to protect my mother. And as I got bigger, he could not stop me and I could hurt him. And that's what happened. And so from the age of 16 until 31, I had no relationship with my father. And I'm sitting in my first fifth step, and I had 16 or 17 resentments towards my father. He physically abused me. He forgot my birthday. He never came to a basketball game. He was an embarrassment to my friends. He put me in a position to lie about him to everyone in my life because I didn't want them to know anything about my father. He was abusive to my mother, my brother, my grandmother. The list went on and on. And every time I read a resentment, the man listening to my fifth step said, Tarek, have you ever done that to someone? Have you ever physically abused someone that you care about? Yes. Have you ever forgotten someone's birthday that you care about? Yes. Have you not shown up to a family event that you were required to attend? Yes. Every single thing my father had done that I was resentful at him for, I had committed. My hypocrisy is still prevalent sometimes in my life. And the 10th step allows me to see my own inherent mixed upness, as in the book Spirituality of Imperfection. I'm both good and bad. I'm both saint and sinner. We are a combination. And if you practice a 10th step in conjunction with an 11th step, you'll start to see and become okay with these aspects of yourself, and you're less likely to act out in them with that level of awareness through meditation. And so my father in 2016, I make my amends to him. And when I asked my dad, I said, what can I do to make things right? Because I wasn't a good son. I physically abused you. I said things that no son should ever say to a father. And the list goes on. And my father said, I just want you to spend time with me. At that point in his life, he drank everyone away. My brother wanted nothing to do with him. My dad had one cousin, and her husband were the only people he communicated with on a regular. And my parents were divorced by this point. My dad had no one. So on Sundays, for the next 9 years, if I was in town, I took my dad to dinner or lunch, and we went and saw a movie. And then my former wife and my stepdaughter, and they fell in love with my father. I fell in love with my father. My father taught me more about unconditional love than any human being I've ever met. My father became a man that I respected. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to fall in love with my father. My father gets diagnosed with liver cancer, I'm sure related to his alcoholism. And so he is going through chemo. I'm there to go take him to chemo. At the same time, my marriage falls apart, and my former wife asks me to move out. At this point, at 2000, I'm 9 years sober, 10 years in between 9 and 10. And I'm living out of a bag, and I have nowhere to call home. I have no anchor. I'm embarrassed because I consider myself, I think maybe some other people do too, like I'm a respected member of the Alcoholics Anonymous community in good standing. What are all these people going to think? I'm not practicing my principles at home. That's why my marriage fell apart, and blah, 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 blah. Thank God for the 10th step. Thank God for the 11th step. Back on the line of the will. Thy will be done. Remove this thinking from my mind, direct my attention to what you would have me be. But you know what ended up happening is my prayer life became much more sincere. For an individual who believes that God is everything, at some point I had to ask myself, it's almost like I'm seeking refuge and sanctuary in God, in my relationship with God. But the entity that I'm seeking refuge and sanctuary from is God. And it's this amazing being okay with the circumstances of your life, even though they're extremely difficult, and they have me balled up in the fetal position in my friend's guest bedroom asking God to keep me safe and protected. God, please keep me safe and protected. And the sincerity was so palpable. And it's the events in my life that have created the most darkness, that have encapsulated the most growth I've experienced in prayer. My prayers currently are not prayers of supplication. Supplication is when I'm constantly asking God. It hit me a couple of years ago. I was listening to a speaker, and he said, wake up tomorrow and don't tell God what you need from him, or ask God what you need from him. God doesn't need a consultant. He said, why don't you see what you can go out and do for God today? And that flipped the script on me. No longer was it important that I constantly ask God for anything other than forgive me for where I have fallen short. Forgive me for forgetting about you. Because I do. I abandon God with most of the breaths that I take, because God is the breath for me and my interpretation. And for me to be unaware of my breath is to be unaware of God. So most of my 10-step practice today is becoming conscious of my breath. This week, when I was doing the practices, as everything was happening, there was a deep, deep breath that was taken. And in that breath, emerged the consciousness of the presence of God that's outlined in our big book. That is a central fact through the practice of the 10th and 11th step. And so the last thing I want to do is, as I want to share a little bit of what I do in the morning. You know, there are two questions that I think are so imperative for an 11th step. And so when I wake up in the morning, my feet hit the ground, right? Big Frank used to say, get your feet on the ground, boy, and get up. My feet hit the ground. I splash cold water on my face. I brush my teeth. I go make a cup of coffee and I sit down. I sit down in a space that's dedicated to prayer and meditation. And I ask myself two questions before I start to pray and meditate. The first question, do I know why I'm about to pray and meditate? Do I have knowledge of why I'm about to pray and meditate? And I'm not looking for a specific answer. I just want this to be sincere. I want my effort to be sincere. Is this becoming such a habit that it's like brushing my teeth? It just happens. And I don't know why it's happening. It's just check, check, check. I don't want it to become a habitual activity that happens with very little knowledge of why I'm doing it. And so I sit and I just watch what goes on in my mind, in my consciousness. I don't care. It's different every day. After I do that for about a minute and a half to 2 minutes, I ask myself a second question. Is my heart present to what I'm about to do? Do I care? What is going on here? Why am I doing this? Is my heart present? Is this about God? Is this about cultivating the expectancy of God's presence? That's what these two steps are about. Cultivating the expectancy of God's presence in my life. My interpretation. It works for me. And it clearly has worked for the men that brought it to me. I did not come up with this. Someone showed it to me and I put it in practical application. And now I have my own experience with it. And so those two questions are then followed by prayers. And my prayers can go on from anywhere from like 2 minutes, sometimes 7-8 minutes. I'm just praying. And it's a conversation and it always has a version of the third step in it. It always has a version of the seventh step in it. But it's rare that I'm going to ask for a specific outcome in my life. I think there's a part of me that just, I want to be okay with everything that happens in my life. I don't want to set myself up to have a resentment towards God. I just don't see the need in asking for specific things, although it happens from time to time. I'm not going to tell you it doesn't happen, but it's become less frequent over the last several years. And then I read two pages out of these books. I'm not reading for knowledge. I'm reading for experience. And what I mean by that is I'm reading something. Does it trigger any memories from my past? Does it put me in a contemplative state with what I'm reading about as it relates to my relationship with God? Because all the books I read are about expanding our spirituality, our relationship with the present moment. What is God? So I read a lot of books by 12th century and 13th century saints. Meister Eckhart, Thomas Aquinas, St. John of the Cross, but then I read a lot of Islamic thinkers, the Sufi saints, and then the Hindu and the Buddhist and the Taoists. It's been very freeing just to investigate, because another ingredient is curiosity. Curiosity is so important for steps 10 and 11. If I'm not curious about it, I'm going to see it as something I can take or leave. And after I read my books, I meditate from anywhere between 15 minutes to 30 minutes. Now, I'm going to share a story of why I do not go below 15 minutes. I'm probably going to come close to ending with this. I was at the Buddhist monastery. It was one of my first classes. And Shifu, who's the nun at the monastery, she came in with one of those plastic white see-through construction buckets. And it had dirty water in it. And she set it down. They had benches on two sides, and then her bench was in the front. She set it down in the middle. and we sat and we meditated. And I can't remember how much time went by. But as we came out of the meditation, she asked all of us to look at the bucket. And all of the dirt and the soot had settled to the bottom of the bucket. And the water in the bucket, which was murky brown, was clear, clear. And she said, this is the human mind. If you want to meditate, each individual is different in the amount of time it takes for that to occur inside of your mind, where it opens up into a void and a vastness. For me, I have found I need to sit for somewhere between 10 and 12 minutes before that happens. And I like to extend past that. So I usually meditate between 15 and 30 minutes, and it's always different. This morning was 20 minutes. And the meditation has nothing to do with me relaxing and taking easy for the rest of the day, although it's in our big book. Big book says we relax and we take it easy. We don't struggle. I think that for me personally, the struggle is sacred. It's part and parcel to the spiritual path. I read St. John of the Cross and Dark Night of the Soul, and I understood what he was talking about. And there are things that I struggle with on a day-to-day basis. There are aspects of my character and my personality that create a burn inside of me, and they are creating a need for God. So they keep me thirsty. And this is one place where I never want to have my thirst quenched. I always want to need God. What creates a need for God for me is the things I'm struggling with, because God is my solution. So there's a mercy and a grace in what I'm experiencing if it's pushing me towards God. This is what steps in 10 have done for me. Steps 10 and 11 have done for me. I mean, I can sit and sometimes I spend hours and hours sitting and talking about these steps because there's so much more that I can share with you. But I just don't have enough time of explaining the importance. You know, Mark used to say that, you know, step 6 and 7 are what separate the men from the boys. Step 12 is the jewel of our program. And step 10 and 11 is the juice. It's the juice, baby. This is how I stay hooked up, you know, but it's 11 in the morning. And then when I put my hand on that doorknob to walk out of my house, as Mark said, it's on at that point. I got to have that 10 step. And that 10 step, interestingly enough, is a combination of 10 and 11 throughout the course of the day. I watch, I pay attention. I become a guardian of my inner space. I become conscious of the presence of God. This is not language that I'm interpreting and bringing in. It's in our big book. But one of the most important things, and I want to end with this, that has helped me understand is my character defects or design features. And for me, I have to recall to the manufacturer on a regular basis. I cannot change myself, but I have to know myself. There is a spiritual tradition out there that says, he who knows himself knows his Lord. And I want to read, and I want to end with this. This is out of the book, It's Spirituality of Imperfection by Ernest Kurtz. Everything human is limited inherently because it comes conjoined with its opposite, righteous and a sinner at the same time. We deny our both and nature, the mixed upness that is part of our human being. We refuse our very self, deny it, in the sense of that lying to self that we call self-deception. A central theme in all spiritual traditions is the insistence that honesty with self, about self, is essential to any spiritual quest. And the greatest, most treacherous dishonesty is the rejection and refusal of our own mixed human nature. The only way that I can have a shot at seeing my own duplicity in my own hypocrisies through practicing a 10th step. I will no longer want to repress it. I will no longer want to keep it in the shadow, and it becomes integrated into who I am. And the baffling, bewildering thing is, the more I acknowledge my capacity to do the things that I don't, that I see other people do that get on my nerves or annoy me or create frustration, the more I can see my capacity, the less I act in that way. I still make mistakes. I still have stuff I have to clean up from time to time. But I don't have a shot in hell of experiencing what this man is talking about unless I have an active 10 step that I'm staying awake. I'm alert, vigilant awareness to what I'm doing. I thank you so much for inviting me back. It is a, you know, to be invited back is a special thing. I've enjoyed my time with this group. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Tarek.